Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It's a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and more importantly, on your life. Listen and follow Jill on Money on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, happy Tuesday, August 5th. Glad to have you here with us on 97.1 FM Talk. Todd Sivia is going to be in studio with us here in about 15 minutes. We're going to talk to him about the big, beautiful bill. He's a estate planning attorney. He's got his real estate license. He knows all the things. I like to ask him questions regularly. Ryan, with the emphatic nod, he knows a lot of things.
That's what's nice about knowing that guy.
The one
you got a guy have a guy who knows things.
Yes, and he knows them. The one big beautiful bill has a whole lot of stuff in it, and there are these little anecdotes within the big beautiful bill. For instance, one that was brought to my attention that I'm looking into right now. There is my understanding. If I get the fine point details wrong on this, I am reserving the right to correct myself at a later time. A $1,700 tax credit. Now, a tax credit means that when it comes time to pay your taxes, if you owe $10,000 in taxes and you have a $1,700 tax credit, that's dollar for dollar towards your cost obligation.
As I understand it, that is true.
That's all right.
The difference between a credit and a deduction.
Correct. So a tax credit is a good thing to have. That there is an up to $1,700 tax credit if you donate up to $1,700 towards an approved scholarship disbursing nonprofit, up to $1,700, you can get a dollar for dollar tax credit on that. And I believe it starts in 2027.
Okay.
It might be 2026, but it might be 2027. Anyway, this was brought to my attention by someone who's like, hey, Annie, you know, you put together that scholarship, would this count? And I'm like, holy crap, I think it probably would. And the way that this person positioned it to me is they think that the way they were reading it, and this was an attorney that, not Todd Sivia, but a different attorney that knows and is interested in helping the Lutheran school the way I am. And by the way, I reached out to my friends at Lisa and they're like, yeah, we're looking into this. This could be amazing. That you basically, as long as you have a $1,700 tax obligation at the end of the year, which most working people do, you basically get to decide, do I want the government to have $1,700 or do I want my scholarship disburser of choice to have $1,700?
Yeah, because it's not yours. I mean, you give it to either the government or the scholarship.
You get to pick. Now, if there are some sort of state rebates or credits that go along with that, I think that there is that somewhere in the big beautiful bill there's some provisions that say, like, if the state is giving it, then the federal will give the remainder of it up to $1,700. If you give $1,000, then you're not going to get a $1,700 credit. You're going to get the credit for that. It has to be an approved an approved entity to handle this. But I love this version of school choice, because you're not redistributing people's tax dollars. You're just incentivizing people to say, do I want the government to have this money to put it wherever, or do I want to dictate where this goes? And if taxpayers choose school choice, then those funds can go to the place of your choice. Maybe it's a Catholic school organization. Maybe it's just a an approved entity that maybe doesn't have a parochial affiliation to it or whatever. And again, we'll dig into the details a little bit as we get closer to the time where this could come into play. Here's the kicker, folks. The states have to buy into it. The states have to approve it within the state. Now, I reached out to Representative Blaine Willhauer to say, what are the odds that the state of Illinois is going to do this? Now, we've had different plans in place in the state of Illinois prior to this, which the governor is now, they're not in play anymore. And I said, is this something the state legislature has to approve? And the response I got from him is not necessarily, that it might be something that the governor of the state has to direct ISBE, Illinois State Board of Education, to implement. And the possibility exists that a man who wants to run for governor may be interested in these types of things and not holding people back from it. But boy, I feel like this is a great opportunity to say to the governor, Mr. Governor, this would be a really great thing for a lot of people across the state of Illinois. And this provision exists. And I think that the people of Illinois should be able to partake in this as well. Can you make this happen? And if he says no, then we raise holy hell.
Seems like there would be no loss to the state doing it at all. Monetarily, the state wouldn't have to pay into
it. If the state tax dollar, if there's no state reimbursement, it'd be federal taxes involved. This is a long way to say that there are a lot of things in this massive bill, big bill, that we don't really know about. And like at some point, do you ever just stop as somebody who covers the news the way we do? You're steeped in it all the time, every day. And the one big, this massive piece of legislation, it's really just like, is it a red victory or is it a blue victory? And then the red team wins and you're like, yeah, the red team wins. Woohoo! And then you just are like, what are we fighting for now? And then you just move on. And then you're like, hold on, wait a second. What was in that thing? How does that benefit us? A lot of frustration bubbled up to the surface while the one big beautiful bill from a lot of conservatives, people who like small government, and they're like, why are we doing one gigantor bill? I thought, you know, there was a time where we were like, single issue bills, single issue legislation. I'm super in favor of that. Well, the answer to that is the reconciliation process was the alternative to this particular piece of legislation. The alternative to smaller government that isn't trying to throw everything in the kitchen sink into one bill is a reconciliation process to get things through the Senate that would never get through the Senate if you had to get 60 votes with the Democrats who are there right now. So we're going to have Todd Sivia come in here at 12:18, and he's going to highlight Coldwater Creek. I was talking with him before the show. Coldwater Creek is part of this bill. That's the toxic creek water that I think would have nuclear waste or something in it.
Oh, here.
Yeah, here. There's a provision in there that we're going to talk with Todd Sivia about in about 10 minutes. There's stuff that we got to know. I also am thinking about adding a segment to the show. I want to know your guys' thoughts on if we could pull this off. If you're doing estate planning, that means you're talking about when you die. Or, in my opinion, worse, when your spouse dies. I can handle a conversation about like, oh, this is what should happen after I die, more than I can handle the conversation that exists with the thought of me being here after my husband dies. Like, I want to go first. And I asked Todd, what hinders people from coming in and actually making that estate plan? Is it like people are worried about the expense of it? Is it the time and the commitment? Is it the like uncomfortable nature of it? He's like, yeah, people don't want to come in and talk about their death. That makes sense. I would propose that once you talk about it, you don't have to worry about it anymore and it's done. So you just face the music, you get it done, and then you move on with your life. But he was like, it's just the uncomfortable conversations. I was like, that sounds like a great segment for the Andy Fry Show.
Uncomfortable conversations. Yeah.
Oh, man.
I mean, we're already kind of doing that.
I go, already doing it. We just need to pick a segment and brand it.
So you're asking us week to think about uncomfortable questions we would ask?
I'm thinking of uncomfortable conversations. I'm thinking about, you know, Monday we don't have a 2 o'clock locked in segment. Tuesday's today at 2:30. One of my favorite things we do, X's and Y's. Is Trisha coming in for that?
Yes.
Okay. X's and Y's. We feel very firmly in the fact that there are two genders determined by your XX or XY chromosome. So we have X's and Y's on Tuesdays where boys and girls ask each other questions.
Mm-hmm. The Y's. It's a pun.
I see what you did
there. It's great. It's not written, though, so you don't really get to experience
it. It's not great.
Oh, no, it is. It really is. If you're just realizing it, you probably just drove into a ditch.
X's and Y's on Tuesdays. Wednesdays, do we have something specific?
No.
No.
Could be uncomfortable conversations.
Could be.
Mm-hmm. Thursdays is...
Annie, are you okay?
Annie, are you okay? Trisha takes that over. And then Fridays, if we have some friends coming in, it's X's and O's. So I was thinking we should have an uncomfortable conversation segment. We should just come up with the uncomfortable conversation, tell the stories of the uncomfortable conversations we have. or maybe that the listener has, you can send it to us and we can like kind of workshop those conversations as to how they would go.
Is this topical or is it just like, oh, one time I had to do this thing and it was an uncomfortable conversation? Like, where does this go?
It's very important. Question that Ryan's asking here, because as soon as he thinks that he has license for story time, he runs with it.
We have to have this conversation now.
The I Have a Friend Who segment we used to
kind of sounds like that to me.
No, just, you know, there people have to have uncomfortable conversations from time to time. Isn't an uncomfortable conversation is super interesting to everybody except for the participants? Isn't that if you're hanging out with your friend and they're like, oh, this happened. It's almost always a story about an uncomfortable conversation. And you're on the edge of your seat. And then what happened? And then what did she say?
So we're telling about uncomfortable conversations that we've had.
It's an idea that I have.
Okay.
That I think that we need to put in our brain file folder. And when it happens, we'll know. And that will be the first day for uncomfortable conversations.
Okay. I've got one.
We'll hold on to it. We might get to it soon. The Texas legislature right now, I'm talking about the state of Illinois and this school choice thing. It's a no-brainer. The only thing that J.B. Pritzker would do is withhold this opportunity for the taxpayer dollars that you're spending to be able to be utilized in a way that you want to invest in. It's not even investing in your own kids' education. It doesn't pull anything away from public education either. It's just for people who are like, I really think that it's important that people have a Lutheran education. That's something that I intend to donate to and support long beyond the time that my kids are in a Lutheran school and getting education, because I believe in the biblical benefit of the ministry of it. It's more than a classroom. It's more than math. It's more important than all of that stuff. If people want to spend their tax dollars and invest in the education of people, they should be able to do that. I'm fairly certain that your local school board, if you wanted to write them a check to support the education, the public education of kids within your community on top of the property taxes you already pay, I'm pretty sure they'd take that check. I'm pretty sure they'd have a place to apply those funds. So if I want to spend money that I have made and earned on the education of people in a way that furthers the ministry of the Christian faith that I ascribe to, that I want other people to have access to if they so choose to go to that school, takes nothing away from public education. Why would the state of Illinois stand in the way? Now, that is a rhetorical question that we annoyingly know the answer to, likely. But the hypocrisy, Illinois is having a banner week this week, and it's Tuesday. It has just begun. Man. There's a lot of time here for Illinois to show its rear to the entire country without any idea of how unflattering it looks. Watching these Texas Democrats come to the state of Illinois, pound their fists on the table, and talk about how what they're trying to do in Texas is so wrong, in the place that gets away with doing this type of bologna sausage on a day-to-day basis because it's flyover country and people only complain about New York and California, maybe in New Jersey and Connecticut every once in a while. Of course, D.C. is a blue hellhole. Politically, so Republicans like to complain about that here. You and I have been standing here for years going, can somebody look at this nonsense, this dumpster fire that is the state of Illinois? They just write it off. They just say that it's absolutely not even worth the attention. It's long gone. And you and I know that the state is so much more red. So much more red than it gets credit for. But because of the very issue that the Texas Democrats came to Illinois to complain about, because of that very issue, the people of Illinois have been disenfranchised. The gerrymandering, the corruption that exists in the state of Illinois has disenfranchised Illinois voters from being represented in Congress, in Springfield. And the Texas Democrats don't think anybody's going to know. I am telling you right now, this whole thing is a ruse to try to push J.B. Pritzker to the front of the line for president. I don't know what kind of donations he's making to what kind of PACs with all his Scrooge McDuck doubloons, but somehow or another, they can't see with the two eyes that they have in the front of their head and the brain cells rolling around between the ears how absolutely ignorant and hypocritical their actions are coming to the state of Illinois. But we see it. We notice it. We're going to call it out, of course. When we come back, Todd Sivia is going to talk to us about some of these provisions in the Big Beautiful Bill that he wants you to know about, that I want you to know about. And we'll take your estate planning questions. We will have an uncomfortable conversation right now. Not yours, Ryan.
Save that. I got a really good one for another time, though.
Do you think what is in your head is also the concept that's in my head, or is this just something you want to say out in the air?
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know.
I think I know.
I'm ready to have an uncomfortable conversation. All right, Todd Sivia in studio with us next. Send us on the Andy Fry YouTube channel all of your questions, estate planning, that type of stuff. We can feature them next with my friend Todd next. Don't go away.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It's a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and more importantly, on your life. Listen and follow Jill on Money on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back to the Andy Fry Show. We're glad that you're here with us. Beautiful day outside and a beautiful day here inside as well. We've got Todd Sivia, the attorney and owner at Sivia Law, of course, a great friend and sponsor of this show. He has put together the trust for my husband and me. You can go to SiviaLaw.com. I'm just going to throw this out there if you'll honor it. If people call right now, will you honor that strategy session thing?
Sure.
Okay. Absolutely. I'll give 833-995-WILL. If you call right now, you can get a free strategy session. I asked him on air, so he had to say yes. Sorry, Todd.
Now, what, do I have a choice?
I mean, you do, but...
Welcome to my world.
Wham.
Hey, you're going to wear a moose costume this weekend, right? Yeah, I guess I am.
That did happen. Todd, the Big Beautiful Bill passed, and we were talking a little bit before the show. I wanted to highlight the Coldwater Creek thing because you brought that up. This bill is massive.
Oh, yeah.
There's ton of stuff in there. What did you want to highlight about that? Because it's really important.
It involves Missouri residents, you know, and the families have been fighting for years upon years about this Coldwater Creek incident, and in the bill, there is a provision for $50,000 to $100,000. For residents, if you can prove residency and diagnosis, it's there.
$50,000 to $100,000.
Yeah. I mean, it's
pales in comparison to the alternative of not having to deal with the problem.
Right. You know, loss of family members and things of that sort. You know, that's always the negative. But you know. I mean, it's an extra amount of cash that's available, and
when something like that gets dispersed, you file the complaint or you make the claim or whatever. Do you just get a check?
Well, I mean, there's a process with regards to it, and they're still working through that process. But it's there, you know, and everybody in this listening area needs to know about it.
Yeah.
And if especially you need help with that, you know. You're welcome to call us, and we'll help you work through that process. You know, we want you to keep as much money of that. If you've been diagnosed and stuff like that, we want to, you know, there's guys out there that are charging a third percent of that. You know, we'll help you work through that.
Yeah.
You know, so that you're not spending all kinds of money on attorney's fees with regards to it.
Certainly.
It should be a pretty easy process, but we're still waiting for the details.
The details of it. You got something this massive, then the implementation of it, I'm sure, is always a challenge.
It's government.
Yeah. I know. I always remind people, like, government isn't supposed to move fast, because think about what they would do to us if it was just snappy all the time.
Right.
What are some things right now that you're looking at? It could be with the bill, could be with other stuff that you've seen that the president is trying to move along. When it comes to estate planning, and like I said, people can go to civialaw.com and learn a little bit more about you if they want to vet you for themselves, which I encourage people to do. What is the cost to not plan?
Oh, thousands. I mean, absolute thousands. It could be, you know, I mean, we're fighting estate you know, I mean, it would not be uncommon for a contested estate to reach $100,000. So, wow. You know, and there's other ones that can be more. And I don't make this lightly. You know, that's not, you know, that's not what I want people to mm-hmm. deal with. But if you're spending, you know, a whole bunch of money on legal fees and the time, you know, there's cases, you know, we've got a case that's been going on since 2017, you know, and that's not what the mom wants.
Is it in probate? Like,
it's
why?
In probate.
So probate, dumb it down for me, Todd. Because did you tell me before, when we were talking before the show, that 80% of folks?
80% of folks, the nation's population, don't even have a will.
So that's a good segue into probate.
Yeah.
Explain it to me like I'm five. What is probate?
Probate is the process of transferring your assets. And if you think about it, you have a house. And if in that house, who signs the deed at the end? And if you don't have somebody signing over that deed, a judge has to sign it. And you have to authorize, you know, if you have a will, somebody has to authorize that is the legit will. There, you know, if we look at...
You can't just have like a napkin that's like, I give all my money to my niece,
right,
Annie, in Madison County in a gun safe somewhere.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way. You have to have, you know, a specific number of witnesses.
So what if you've told everybody? What if you're 70 years old and you've made it clear to your whole family, this is how I want my things to be divvied up. Everybody knows. Everybody witnessed it.
If it's not written, it's not legal. So if it's not written down, then it's not a legal document. A judge can't look at and say, well, this is what he wanted.
So if
and even testimony, it doesn't mean anything because it's hearsay.
So if you're 75 years old, you got four kids. Yep. You've told everybody, listen,
divided equally.
I want everybody to get 25%. I want Sally to get my cars. I want Johnny to get the boats. I want George to get the house. And I want Bob to get the farm or whatever. And everybody knows it and understands it. And everybody agrees after death that's how there's no fighting like usual, right? Yeah. Everybody's happy. Does it still have to go through probate to make that happen?
Yes, because
even if you agree,
everybody agrees. You know, like I was tell about my Uncle Gene. He had 26 nieces and nephews. Everybody agreed that everybody was going to get a certain dollar amount, but it still had to go through probate, and it was a 2-year process.
Wow.
We had to wait for it to be sold, and you know, the attorney made $10,000 and the executor made $10,000 on an uncontested estate.
So somebody called, I mean, small estate, big estate, whatever.
Yeah.
Talk to Todd Sivia, you get your trust established, I've had this conversation with you. Yeah. You do cross all the T's, you dot all the I's, and then you go back to make sure that you did.
Yeah.
Compared to probate. So same scenario, 75-year-old mom, four kids, everybody gets this. Mm-hmm. You've just put it down on paper.
Yeah.
And you've made it so that it is a legally binding agreement. What's the difference in timeline and expectation at passing?
It could be as quick as 3 months.
Compared to 2 years?
Compared to 2 years. So, you know... I always tell everybody, you know, my mom used an example after Uncle Gene died. She said that I can finally grieve for Uncle Gene because
the business was done.
The business was done. We're, you know, his estate is settled. So, you know, waiting till the end and waiting for the court to finally issue, you know, the final order and things of that sort. And all the detail associated with it.
This is a risky question to ask a lawyer. Is probate intentionally burdensome and complicated? Or is it a necessary process?
It's a necessary process. You've got to go through a process. You want the checks and balances. You want to make sure your accounting is completed and things of that sort. And then everybody gets what they're supposed to get at the end.
And don't throw a fit. Hold on a second. Can you tee up your question for the next segment?
Yeah, because it's from listeners. So, I have one, two. If we can,
three, four.
Well, I have one, two, three, four.
Check, check. Mic check.
Is that a great tee up?
No, it's terrible.
It was awful.
We've got Todd Sivia in here. He is my attorney. He has helped establish our trust with my husband. We're going to ask him some of your questions when we come back. So we've got him for another 10, 15 minutes or so. So keep it right here. If you want to throw a question out for us, make it better than the ones we already have, and it might get in the next segment. You can go to the Annie Fry YouTube channel in the live chat. Throw your comments in there. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It's a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and more importantly, on your life. Listen and follow Jill on Money on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Dang, I
see you over there. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. We've got Todd Sivia in studio with us. A reminder for any sort of estate planning needs that you might have, powers of attorney, wills, living wills, trusts, I encourage you to call Sivia Law. You can go to sivialaw.com, 833-995-WILL. And because I put him on the spot, he will honor if you call 833-995-WILL, that free strategy session. But you do got to tell him Annie sent you. You are a man of many, many categories of knowledge, Todd. And I'm hoping that you can hit this ball out of park, because I never know what Ryan's going to say when he asks a question. But he said he has a question for you here.
This is coming from a listener in Missouri. He says, in Missouri specifically, I've found that wills have no bearing in the state. You must have a trust. Is that true?
Well, At all points in time, if you have a will, it's always subject to the court. So the court has to accept it. So, we had a will contest over in Illinois, and it doesn't matter if it's Illinois or Missouri.
Is that like a pie-eating contest?
Yeah, well...
Ryan.
Well, you know, I mean, we do have a great governor that probably would win it. So...
That's 833-995-WILL. 833-995-WILL. The phones are ringing off the hook. CiviaLaw.com.
But with regards to wills, you know, if all the requirements are not completed, you have to complete all the requirements, which may be the number of witnesses, and it has to be at a certain point in time, and it has to be their signature, and just verifying all that. You have to make sure that it's verified. If it's not, doesn't comply with the rules, then the courts are going to kick it out.
So it's nothing specific to Missouri that you're like, oh, you got to watch for this.
Well, I mean, in every state. In every state in the union, there are certain requirements. I mean, I had a couple that had a power of attorney, but because they didn't have enough witnesses and notaries, and they lived in Illinois, they got injured in Iowa, and because there wasn't enough requirements, signatures on the power of attorney, Iowa hospital didn't recognize it. And so there was all kinds of problems of Iowa recognizing the power of attorney that was drafted in Illinois because the attorney only had like one witness or something like that. I can't remember the rules, but
I mean, if you're planning, if somebody wants to contest a will, things just get complicated.
Oh yeah.
So
unless you have a section that says no contest. So if it says...
God, lawyers can do whatever they want.
If it says no contest...
I'm putting that on this piece of paper and I'm signing it, and you don't get to contest me anymore.
Yeah.
Contest me.
I can't.
No.
At the end of the show sheet, no contest.
Todd hasn't signed that thing yet. You just wrote it on a piece of paper. Doesn't mean anything.
I signed it.
But if there's general language within in your estate planning documents that require a no contest, then you can eliminate all.
I don't want to like get into my whole trust, but wasn't there something like if you contest this will, you're out of it?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Todd, you get zero. Todd Sivia?
You get zero.
He has a scepter when he works with you.
What about just sort of like not liking it? Is that contested?
Well, you can not like it privately, but you file something, you get nothing. You know, it's a huge disincentive to litigating over it. Now, there are some, you know, like if the trustee is stealing money or, you know, if they're not doing their job, then yeah, there could be some litigation associated with it. But that's not contesting it. It's just enforcing what sure. the terms are. But on the flip side, you know,
that's why you need a watertight attorney from the very get-go. And I would say, Todd, you can back me up or correct me on this. Not you, Ryan, you keep quiet. that if you're listening to this conversation right now and you're like, yeah, I really got to get to that. The thing that's going to make you eventually get to that is some sort of stress or turmoil. Maybe a diagnosis that isn't terminal, but it just made you think the thoughts. Yeah. Then that conversation accelerates into emotion very quickly. If you are in a position right now and you're listening and you're in good health, your finances are doing fine for you, and life is going well, you're not thinking like, what about when I die or my spouse dies? This is probably the most important time for you to have this conversation, because you don't have these other emotional factors weighing in on you. You're in a better headspace to have that discussion.
Yeah. I mean, my father-in-law, he, you know, like literally, you know, a year ago, he was go-karting with my youngest son, and he finished the race, and he just passed over and died.
Oh.
Of a heart attack just instantly. And you know, it can happen so quick. And you don't know when, you know, I would be so rich if I had if I could plan and tell everybody exactly what it's going to end up being at you know, when you're going to pass and all that. But there's so many things.
And the conversation, like when I sat down with you, my husband and I were sitting there and you were asking questions. There were such thoughtful questions, and it was easy in that situation to sit down and just look at each other and be like, oh, yeah, well, we think X, Y, Z. And then we just moved through it. And you made it so simple for us. Before we go, I wanted to give you the opportunity to highlight some of the things in the Big Beautiful Bill that you want people to know about. You already talked about and brought to my attention the Coldwater Creek thing, which is really important for our listeners here in the Missouri side. And you do practice in Missouri and Illinois. What do you want people to know about this big piece of legislation?
If you were thinking about starting a business, or you have any thoughts of starting a business, this is a great time to do so for the next 3 or 4 years. With depreciation and being able to depreciate most purchases, this is absolute. I mean, like 100% depreciation.
Do you think that'll make an effect? Do you see it for yourself? But are people going to go out there and take a risk now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's more incentive for you to do it today than at any point in time. You know, we saw an increase when the last time the bill was passed and they had 100% depreciation, and then it kind of waned off. But this is a great time to do that.
Do you help people with that?
Yes. Absolutely.
So,
you know,
that's part of,
you know, I always say, you know, your attorney, especially you're into business or you're associated with business, your attorney needs to know three big things. They need to know how to handle real estate. They need to know business related items, and they need to know estate planning.
And you have your license to do all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And those three together, so often, you know, co-coordinate because, you know, say you have a farm. Well, that's a business. So you need to know all the deductions and be able to plan for that. If you're, you know, so you have land as well. So you got real estate, and then you got this whole component of estate planning. That's huge. You know, if you are just a business owner, you need to be able to handle your leases, or own, you know, whether or not you should own real estate, mm-hmm. or any of that. You know, those are all, you know, important subject matters to have good knowledge about. So,
well, I appreciate you coming in here and talking to us about this. These uncomfortable conversations are going to get really weird later in the show after you leave, Todd. But for anybody who's listening right now, 833-995-WILL, if you're interested in talking to him about it. But that Coldwater Creek element of the Big Beautiful Bill, please, if that is something that affects you, our hearts go out to you and your family if you've suffered from this really, really tragic situation here in our listening area. Look into it and see if you qualify for that. And if you do, absolutely get on it. And Todd can help you if you need help. But we're grateful to have you in here, Todd. Thanks for working with us.
Not a problem.
All right. We'll have you back soon. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, Wiggins America. And at 1 o'clock, Jim Carafano. The question I'm going to ask Jim Carafano is, are there people in Gaza who are starving? And if there are, who's starving them? Wonder what Jim will say. We'll be right back.
Wiggins. Oh, Wiggins. I bet you were wondering what foods to avoid. It's so hard to miss these foods and not eat things you don't like that I'm trying to just help you. These are the most hated foods in America.
The news you can use.
So, you really can. You really can, because if you've never tried some of these things, maybe you want to make sure that you hate them.
I'd like to meet the person who listens to this segment and goes, you know what? I think I will hate that food.
I want to meet that person too.
Doesn't everybody know what foods they hate?
Nope. They don't. They know what foods they hate, but they need peer pressure to hate more.
That's going to be used
That's
in
healthy.
An ad against me someday from this show. It's not going to be talking about food.
Don't misquote me. I'm talking about food.
Yeah, you'd future, never do that to people.
Future super PACs.
Super PACs?
All right, I'm just going to start with one. Blue cheese.
They're pretty super.
Love it.
Blue cheese is one of the most hated foods in America.
Really?
39% of Americans say blue cheese is a despicable food to them.
I had cheese on a salad the night I went to urgent care for laryngitis, and it was a delicious salad.
That was just recently.
Mm-hmm. I really like week. Blue cheese.
What else?
Do you like blue cheese on its own, though,
yes.
outside of a salad?
Like, yeah.
Nobody just eats blue cheese.
It's like a topping or a condiment or a dressing.
It's a cheese.
I think that's probably true. That's oysters.
No.
Gross. Never had them.
Oysters can be very good. I'm not sure there's a food on here that I hate. Caviar.
Never had it. Wouldn't
I'm too
eat
poor
it.
For that.
The caviar, well, it's not caviar,
poor,
but the
don't have any idea.
Masago on sushi.
I'm with you, Ethan.
On top. And, I mean, you can't really taste it.
Technically, I think caviar and fish eggs in general are very, very good.
Doug said that blue cheese is for snobby salads. All right, Doug.
All right. I disagree.
Why? What makes it snobby?
I don't know.
The way it's spelled, blue.
Blue.
Like, oh, get
blue.
Over it.
Blue.
Oh, yeah. It's
crazy.
French.
Exactly. Tofu. Now, this is the one on the list that I'm real borderline on. I can eat it, but it's not preferred.
When I was in Hawaii, tofu is plentiful there. So is Spam. Didn't try either.
Really? Why?
Spam?
Yeah.
Oh, but Spam is a huge thing in Hawaii.
You don't know why?
It has to do with the military.
Oh,
am
it's
I wrong
travelable
about that?
Meat. Because they probably don't have a lot of local meat.
I think it has to do with military. But
makes sense.
Spam is everywhere. It's like a normal, like people talk about Spam the way we talk about turkey.
No kidding.
It's just everywhere.
See, everything's so expensive because of imports there. So I imagine Spam's a cheaper option.
Yeah. Well, they have Spam everywhere. And I had intended to try it. And then I was like, I'm on vacation. Why would I do things I don't want to do? I'll do what I want here. Yeah.
What did you do?
Didn't.
You didn't try it?
No.
She didn't want to. So she didn't.
But you've had
Ryan,
Spam.
She was on vacation.
No.
You've never had it?
Ryan, I'm not a trier.
You're a doer.
Or a not doer.
An undoer.
There is no
Have
try.
You had tofu?
Not that I know of. Not on purpose.
Brad? I don't like it. Texture's all wrong.
Sometimes
all
if it's
wrong.
Cooked right, it's okay.
No,
you know what
you
ticks
can't
me
cook
off?
It right.
When people are trying to get you to eat something, they're like, oh, it tastes just like chicken. And I'm like, then why the heck wouldn't I eat chicken?
Because well, they don't have chicken in Hawaii.
Yes, they
yeah,
have.
They have so many chickens.
There's chickens everywhere.
There's chickens everywhere.
They don't have squirrels.
They all fell in the volcanoes.
They don't have squirrels. They have chickens.
All of them fell in the lava.
I did not realize until we actually were like very close to going and I had watched so many YouTube videos about Oahu and planning for Hawaii that in Moana, Heihei, the chicken, it makes total sense. Like, I just thought it was a rando chicken in
Moana.
I don't
know what you're talking about.
Well, roosters and chickens.
I know the difference.
They just, I'll explain it later in detail.
X's and Y's.
Good. You want to just do the rest of the show? You know
that was
everything?
Good.
I'm going to walk into something here, set it up, put the ball on tee for me to hit it out of the park. You just jump right in there.
I will, but I need to know where you're going first.
I was going to say X's and Y's.
So you're making a point about chickens and roosters.
No.
He says scoop.
Really excited for X's and Y's later.
Thank I know, me too now.
Chicken, what a scoop.
Chickens running around everywhere.
In Hawaii.
Hawaii. Just like feral.
All over the place.
And roosters, and they're really pretty. They look like Heihei.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't. What is Heihei? I really don't know.
He is the rooster from Moana.
I'll just let you guys do the segment. Go on.
Oh, look who's scooping now. It's Burfin.
Burfin.
All right. Sardines.
I like them. They're all right.
I love sardines. 52% of America hates sardines. They're one of the most healthy fish you can eat, though.
Really?
In olive oil, they are.
I was going to say, do you eat them in olive oil or mustard?
Not mustard. Liver.
No.
Any specific kind of liver or just liver?
I'm not sure what gross. The kinds of liver are. No, I like, mean, like of an animal?
Yeah, which animal? That's what I mean.
I don't know. I have no idea. Chicken livers is what I usually eat. Anchovies is the number one most hated food in America.
Gross.
Okay. So I was going to say, do you like anchovies? It sounds like the answer is no.
I don't eat seafood.
They just taste like salt. If you have them on a pizza, it's like you just salted
the pizza. Then why wouldn't I eat salt?
I don't know. You could. You want to just salt the pizza?
Get the salt shaker out.
Yeah.
Get to eating.
Just salt your pizza.
Get you a spoon.
And let us know why you haven't been doing this. Did I say chitlins yet?
No.
Chitlins is only 39% of America hates it, but we have to understand here, these are pig intestines.
Mm-hmm.
And so once you know, tends to be a little higher. And last on the list, although there are a couple other stragglers, is sushi. 38% hate sushi, but then 23% say they love sushi so much that it's their favorite food.
This is right there for me, favorite.
Oh yeah, it's up there for me too. Are there any other foods that I did not say that you think should be added to this list?
Brussels sprouts. I hate Brussels sprouts.
It's kind of a trendy food.
Gross.
It is a trendy
they're
food.
Bitter.
It
they're
is
green.
One of them that's listed.
Kale.
As not top 10, but is on the list.
Okay.
Kale.
Kale is on there. Eggplant would be one that I would add because I do not like eggplant. But I do like beets.
Red cabbage. I don't like that stuff either. It's all bitter.
Annie, do you have anything for the list?
I don't like most foods.
Okay. That's good.
I'm a meat and taters kind of girl. Beef and taters.
Yeah, beef is a meat.
Specifically. It's a specification. I'll explain that to you later as well.
I'm on X's and Y's.
We're going to take a quick break, and on the break, Ryan and I are going to have an uncomfortable conversation.
Oh, no. I hate these.
And Jim Carafano and I are going to have an important conversation when we come back. What is going on in Gaza? Where is this relief going? We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It's a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and more importantly, on your life. Listen and follow Jill on Money on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.